Today on Piano Jazz, Marian McPartland welcomes Hazel Scott, one of the great singers and pianists of the jazz generation and a contemporary of jazz royalty, such as Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, and Count Basie. Born in Trinidad, Scott eventually made her way to Juilliard, where she developed the skills of a musical chameleon that would eventually characterize her sound. She took her music to all of the landmarks of American musical greatness, from Carnegie Hall to Cafe Society to Hollywood. She even became the first African-American woman to have her own television show. Hazel Scott was Marian McPartland's guest in 1980 and opened the show with a beautiful version of Memories of You.
That is really pretty, Hazel.
Thank you, Mary.
Yubi would have been proud of you.
Yeah, he's marvelous.
And welcome to the show. It's
Thank
great
you.
To have you here.
It's a joy to be here.
That's quite a key you picked.
It's quite brilliant. I love to hear
somebody play in a key of D.
I like to sing in that key, too.
It's amazing about that tune. That's one of the most timeless tunes, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It can just fit every era. I'd really like to go back a little ways quite a way, actually, and ask you how you got started playing piano.
You know, they tell me that I used to use my potty chair. I'd sit on the floor and play on the potty chair. And so
a new one.
I had to be young, right? My mother was a teacher of piano, and it's a little sad because she was preparing to be a concert pianist. This was in Trinidad.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until she was just about ready, which is why I always say rehearsal is not performance. She didn't know until she actually concertized for the first time, a two-hour concert, that her wrists couldn't hold up for an entire concert. They were too small. And in spite of all the muscles and all the work she'd done, she said, well, if they won't hold up, they won't hold up. No tragedy. I'll just have to teach. And she was the first person I heard who said, those who can do and those who can't teach. She said that to me the first time. I said, what does that mean? I used to feel very tragic for her, you know.
Well, but out of her teaching came you and your wonderful playing.
Yes, indeed. She did a lot more than teach me.
What tunes did you play then? I mean, when did you...
Well, then I started playing, of course, because it was Trinidad. I started playing all the popular songs of the day, you know, mm-hmm. all the little calypsos. And they thought that was highly amusing. And then, of course, I couldn't reach the pedal, so it was all very percussive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I came here, I started playing in public immediately. All little concerts and things. Then when I was 8, she took me to Juilliard because she said, I can't teach you anymore. And I was supposed to audition for Walter Damrosch, but he was busy, and so Oscar Wagner was listening to me. And I had the Rachmaninoff Prelude in C sharp minor, and I couldn't stretch an octave. I could only reach six notes. So I had redone all the harmonies so that, you know, I could do it with six notes instead of eight. And suddenly the door bursts open, and here's this man in an absolute rage. He says, "Who is paraphrasing Rachmaninoff?" And it was Walter Damrosch.
How did you paraphrase
instead
it?
I did that. I made the six.
Oh, wow.
I put the sixth. He said, "Who is paraphrasing Rachmaninoff?" He was furious.
Goodness, what an ear! Because you know, yeah, most people wouldn't. That's such a small thing.
Yeah,
really.
Well, he heard it. He was a terror. And then he said, "Oh," and he said, "All right, go over there." He started air training me immediately. So they accepted me. Although at that time you had to be 16 to go to Juilliard.
How long were you there?
4 years.
Goodness.
Yeah.
You know, the first time
you find me scooting around, going into all sort of unorthodox places, and I wasn't supposed to be, you know.
The first time I heard you was playing something classical, with a jazz. It was some Chopin mixed with jazz.
I did that in self-defense because I was, at 14, my mother was sent for. The rest of my family sent for my mother, and they said that I was a bad girl, which wasn't true. And my mother took one look at me and broke up again because she was always highly amused by me. And she said, "All right, what is all this about?" I said, "What it's about is that they don't understand. I mean, you mustn't leave me home with these squares. You must take me in the band with you." And she said, "But you're 14 years old. You have to go to school." I said, "I know, but I can sleep after school." So she left Lil Armstrong's band, Lil Hardin, you know? Mm-hmm. And she formed her own group and took me in the band. She took me down to local 802. First, we didn't go to 802 because they all knew me. I'd been running around there since I was very small. I just started playing up piano in the band. And one night, the delegate walked in, Johnny Mattson, I'll never forget. And he said, "Alma, you know better than this. The kid is a scab."
What a terrible thing to
Isn't
say.
Isn't it horrible?
That's awful.
So my mother said, "All right." So I said, "What's a scab?" I'll never forget. I said, "What's a scab, Mom?" He said, "It means you're taking a union person's place." I said, "Oh." So I said, "Can we get me in the union?" She said, "We're going to try." So we go up the next afternoon, and there's Charlie Solinger. And he's still there, bless his heart.
Yes.
He says to me, "When is your book coming out?" Because he's in it, right? So he looked at my mother and he looked at me. She said, "I want a card for the kid." He said, "Alma, you know better than that." She said, "I tell you what." She said, "Johnny Mattson, the delegate, comes on the job and he says, she's taking a union person's place. He says, Alma, you know better than this. I bring her up here to get a card and you say, Alma, you know better than this. And she tells me if I leave her at home, she's going to run in the streets. What do you suggest I do?" He gave me my union card. I was 14.
I thought you were going to tell me you played some classics on the job or something
No, I did that at Cafe Society later on.
The thing you told me about where you played the cocktail piano. And,
oh, yeah, when I was 15.
That's fascinating. Was that at Cafe Society?
Yeah, No. I had been in my mother's band then for about a year, mm-hmm. and some of the other ladies were getting upset because I was being cute. You know, I'd get a lot of attention because I was so young, and the people would gather around, and then I'd, of course, perform. So my mother said, "There's only one way she'll keep her band together is to throw me out of it." So she chose, before I took that job I was telling you about, she chose for my baptism of fire to have me play at Roseland Ballroom.
Oh, goodness.
Opposite the new orchestra that had just come up from Kansas City and had set New York on its ear. 16 men, the Count Basie Orchestra. Mm-hmm. So as we're going up the steps, I hear this, "Papa! I said, "What's that?" She said, "That's the Count Basie Orchestra." And as we go up, my mouth hung open, right? I couldn't believe what was happening. And then they walked off the stage. And I said, "What happens now?" She said, "You."
So what did you play?
Well, Joe Jones, the drummer, put his foot on the back of my white dress. And they saw the footprint in order to propel me out on stage. And he came out and played with me, and Walter Page. And Freddie Green joined.
Goodness.
And I forget. I played something, but they helped me out, and I got through it.
That's exciting.
That was trauma, because from that minute on, I'm never worried about who I have to follow on stage. If I survived that night, you know?
I would think.
Then I started playing around, and then she would take me to work, and she didn't work for a while. She'd take me to work and come and get me when the job was over. It was a place called the Yacht Club on 52nd Street,
mm-hmm.
and I was 15 by that. And I would play for cocktails and for dinner, and the star of the show would come in, and she'd sit there and have dinner, and she'd send the busboy out to the floor and say to me at the little piano, and she'd say, tell her she can't play that because the star does it in the show. And each, you know, any tune that I would go into, can't play that one. If it was nice and people looked around, paid attention instead of talking, she'd tell her she can't do that one because I do it in the show. So finally I sat there one night and I said, she is really giving it to me. How can I get her? I said, I know how. I'll do the Bach inventions, the 2 and 3 part inventions, and I'll syncopate them and see if she does that in the show.
You can do a little bit of what you did.
I'd play it all the way through straight, and then I'd go. You know, up, really up-tempo. And people started looking around. She looked bewildered.
My God, all those things swing like mad, don't like that, too.
And on and on. And so it became a game. And then I started doing it. My mother hated it because she was a purist. She liked her jazz straight and she liked her classics straight. And she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, this is self-defense. Believe me when I tell you it's necessary. I did things like Percy Grainger and I did Derek Malyanov, what do you call the little waltz. And I did all kinds of things. So
you could do Chopin preludes?
Yeah, Chopin, and she'd just shake her head.
Well, they were very successful.
And the minute waltz.
The minute waltz.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I remember, I think. Didn't you sort of... Didn't you kind of take...
And the tempo is like this.
Yeah, I remember that on the record. Boy... Well, let's just do something and maybe take a more down tempo because...
Let's do Ellington.
Okay.
You know, every time we get to the end of the phrase, that I do it the way he did it when it was Concerto for Cootie.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'd forgotten. That's how it started out.
And I automatically go into it instead of doing it the new way.
Well, I guess I...
And it's wrong. If you're going to play Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me, you should play Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me.
No, but I guess that's the way I learned it. As a matter of fact, you just taught me something because I didn't know that...
Concerto for Cootie?
I mean, I knew it was Concerto for Cootie, but I don't remember
the way the phrase ends. Yeah, it's so pretty.
See, I've learned new things every day.
Boy, Ellington, well, I called him, he used to get such a charge out of me because I called him Mount Rushmore.
Rushmore.
The first
why?
Time I, well, you that's mean, what he asked. He said, why? I said, well, they should push the other fellas to one side and let you sit there too. So
that
all of
true.
You, all of you should be there. He was highly amused. Oh, he loved that.
I would think so. Boy, and I sort of agree with that too.
Oh, he's tremendous.
Matter of fact, what
I also called him Duke Elephant, but that wasn't original.
Oh yeah, there was
Kenny
sort of a
Clark.
Flash of that.
Yeah.
Was the Duke Elephant, Count Basic?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a few of them I can think. Ruby Brash. Stuff like that. And well, let's see. How about something for you as a solo?
All right.
You mentioned a tune which I just love, and I've honestly never heard anybody do.
Really?
Ghost of Yesterday.
Every time, I can't sing it because I sing some of the spring, but I play Ghost of Yesterday because every time I hear it, I hear Lady Day singing it. You know, I hear the echo in my head. It's really something.
That's a lovely, it's really a lovely song, written by somebody you know as Irene Wilson.
Yeah, I always say Irene Wilson.
And Dick Phipps.
Irene Higginbotham.
Irene Higginbotham.
And you go.
Irene Kitchings. Uh-huh. But I guess, I think that was her, maybe that was her maiden,
her maiden name
before she married
Teddy. I never
knew
that before. When I first heard her things, of course, Billie Holiday.
Yeah, that's
where
why
she
I
was my mentor
that.
As a singer. She taught me everything. And she's, you must do this song. You know, I said, I've never been able to do Ghost of Yesterday.
Well, apart from Billy sort of inspiring you to sing, don't lyrics of songs give you ideas for playing, or don't certain lyrics make you want to play songs?
Don't you know what Lester Young said? He said, people who play solos, who improvise on songs, and they never read the lyric to it. He said, it's nonsense. He never recorded anything that didn't have the music in front of him.
Really?
Just to read the lyrics once through before you recorded it.
Yeah, that's quite an idea. I usually know part of the lyric, some of it, but to actually
read it through—that
mm-hmm. that is rather a nice idea, because I guess you let your imagination run riot if you know what the song was about.
Right.
I might as well do one by Irene. This is one. I don't know how many she wrote actually, but
I think this is my favorite. Some of the Spring.
Okay.
Thank you. You're going to have to excuse me for reacting and during your solo. If I react, I can't help it. I feel it. Did you hear me murmuring?
Listen, I was only flattered. But isn't that a beautifully put together
She's
tune?
Incredible. And the lyric to that tune, some other spring I'll try to love. Now I still cling to faded blossoms, fresh when worn, left crushed and torn like the love affair I mourn. Oh,
oh, that is a lyric.
Oh.
You feel like singing it?
Oh, I can't stand it. How dare
well,
she?
Well, who wrote the lyric? Did she write that too?
Yeah, lyrics and music. The whole thing.
Oh, she really had some feeling.
You know what I mean? That's absolutely. It's like Gordon Parks. Gordon Parks makes me furious. I said, it's all right to call yourself a Renaissance man or to even be one, but how dare he write the lyrics and the music of Don't Misunderstand? He was directing a film, and he wanted a pretty ballad, and so he wrote one.
I don't know that one.
You don't?
Or at least
let me do that here.
Do it. Do it.
Don't misunderstand. We are only strangers on our way to someone else, to some place we forgot. Don't mistake my smile. It just means I'm lonely. Love me till this day is past, and then forget we met. We're just stealing time. In a secret place. Yielding to a soft wind today. To love the pain away. Misunderstand. You are no concern of mine. But in case you're free sometime and need some time with me sometime to hold my hand, then I will understand.
Pretty song. That is a pretty song. When you started it, now I know I have heard that,
sure.
But I didn't realize Gordon Parks.
It's great to play and it's great to sing. You know, isn't he something?
He's
directing the film, and he said, I need a pretty ballad here. And he went home that night and wrote it.
It's nervy, isn't it?
Oh.
Well, oh, goodness. What can we do? What can you and I do together?
Let's do something by Mary Lou.
I would love to. You know, I admire that woman so much.
She was really an inspiration to me.
Yeah, to me too. But you know what I love about her? She always gets these great left-hand bass lines going, and then she sort of looks provocatively at the bass player and says, sort of, play
That's
this after me.
Uh-huh.
The poor guy is standing
going
there befuddled,
the
going up the wall. And, you know, she doesn't write it down or anything. She just does it.
And he looks a little perplexed.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
All right, you want to start this one?
Yeah, a cool bongo.
Cool bongo, right. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. Boy, you do swing, gal.
I don't know.
Wonderful. That felt really good. It's just really fun playing two pianos.
I like it. I don't do a lot of it.
Well, we should do some more sometime.
Yeah, Donald came in the club one night, and he was so funny. He said,
who?
Donald Shirley. He said, I feel like playing. I almost dropped dead from shock. I said, right now, right now. So I put him on, and he played just the way you are. He'd never played it before. He just felt like playing that.
Just the way you are?
But classically.
Oh.
Unbelievable. He got pin drop silence in that place.
You mean?
Like this. But he was just so gossamer, you couldn't believe it.
It's funny, he used to do that at the Hickory House, because he
faint tracings.
Yeah, and with really a beautiful touch.
Do you know who had the most beautiful touch on a piano of anyone I've ever heard in my life? Lenny Hayton.
Really?
Oh, it would make you cry.
I used to think it was Ellis. Well, Ellis, well, I mean, Ellis is in there.
Ellis,
he's in the top
sounds
five,
like
isn't
he? Horses' hooves when you compare it to... Now you know. Because he is the most delicate soul on earth, right?
He is.
You should hear Lenny Hayton. Oh, I hope I can find a record of Lenny playing somewhere. He played my piano in Paris one night.
That piano?
Yeah,
that
one.
Special piano?
Uh-huh. And I told him, I said, Lenny, the neighbors are very touchy here. And it was Thanksgiving night. I'll never forget it. He said, I want to play. And he sat down. And Lena and I are sitting across the room, you know, and a couple of other people. And he played the most delicate piano I've ever heard in my life. And I told this to a couple of musicians. They said, oh, didn't you know about Lenny? Oh, yeah. His touch makes you weep.
You know, that's really an art to be able to get every note out. So
that's right.
People hear the note, well, like with clarity and yet with delicacy.
That's really something. It's tough to do.
It sure is. But George Shearing is no slouch at that
either. He's something, isn't he?
He sure is. Somebody I recall you talking about before, Hazel, was one of my favorite singers, and I know of yours, Mildred Bailey.
Oh, wow, one of my favorite people on earth.
Where did you work with her?
Well, at Cafe Society. Briefly, I went in there. Billie Holiday created the job for me. She quit 3 weeks early.
Oh.
And she said, hire Hazel Scott. And so the owner said, who's Hazel Scott? She said, don't ask questions, just hire her. And I was there, that's November, and then the following October, he opened the place on 58th Street. For a while, it was the Fine Arts Cinema, and now it's a church. It was very strange to go by there, because that was the spot in New York where everybody came when they hit town. Immediately, it was like a lodestar, you know?
You mean Cafe Society?
Mm-hmm.
Uptown,
the one on 58th Street. Uptown and downtown, actually, but the one on 58th Street. Mary Lou took over my spot downtown when I moved uptown.
Oh, I see. So, in other words, you were both working each club...
That's it.
...together.
Right.
Tell me something about Mildred. I knew her a little, but not, you know,
incredible. First of all, I had this huge dressing room. It was like an apartment. And they had fixed it up because I was a regular there. They'd fixed it up all kinds of ways. And I felt a little strange because Mildred was a great to me, you know, like Mary Lou Williams, another one. And I said, no, she's got a tiny dressing room over there. The others. I want her to dress in here with me. Besides, she'd be fun. So I said, Mildred, why don't you dress with me? She said, okay. So she brought her stuff in, and we laughed every night, all night long. She had an expression for the audiences when they were hostile. She'd come up, and I'd say, how are they tonight, Mildred? And she'd say, well, the assassins are out there tonight. And then another night I'd say, how are they? She said, they brought butcher knives tonight. Another night I'd say, how are they? She said, they brought axes.
Well, what did she say if they were good?
Very seldom did Mildred find them good.
She was a very particular lady.
Oh, please. You know when she found them good? When they were very, very quiet. Although they were usually quiet there, or they get tossed out, you know, we would insist on it. But if they were very quiet and loved ballads, then Mildred would think they were okay. It's hard to hold an audience with a ballad. She was so funny. One night we were eating Chinese food, and she had this enormous topaz. And I looked, and the topaz was just covered with the sauce from the lobster Cantonese. And I said, Mildred, will you look at your ring? And she looked down. She said, yep, stuff is everywhere, isn't it? Never turned her for a second. It's great.
How about you singing one? Hmm? How about you singing
one for us?
I hadn't anyone. Tell you I was a lonely one. Tell you I used to lie awake and wonder if there could be someone in this wide world just meant for me. Now I see I had to save my love for you. I never gave my love till you. And with my lonely heart demanding it, Cupid took a hand in it. I hadn't anyone. I was a lonely one. I hadn't anyone till.
In case anyone just tuned in, that's the fabulous Miss Hazel Scott singing and playing, and I'm Marion McPartland talking to Hazel.
Let's do tunes that have the same names but have nothing to do with each other by different composers.
All right.
Soon by Rodgers and Hart, and soon by George and Ira Gershwin. Yeah, Rodgers and Hart.
And, let's see.
Right, Gershwin.
Go, you start, and I'll see where you go. the way
that we, was fun.
We rehearsed it.
We didn't rehearse
I
it.
I know. That's why I said that. That's why I said that. It would, I hate to rehearse.
That's inside, very inside.
Because sometimes the...
You'll come across something that you won't do it again. If you lose the spontaneity.
I know. Or else you're thinking, gee, I said right here I was going to do
right.
Thus and so this must be the place. And while you're thinking it,
you become static. Oh dear.
Well, we've got some more soon tunes. I thought of another one that would be nice if you'd sing it, tune by Duke, All Too Soon.
Oh yeah.
Too soon we had to part. The moment you had touched my heart, and with you went my dream. Our affair, and you put all the sweetness there. What a shame that it's gone all too soon. I knew the strength. Bottom fell from everything. You should know as well as I, our love deserved another try, but you whispered goodbye. Too
playing. I join her. Thank you.
I was waiting for you to sing it out, but I guess
no,
you...
No, I wanted to play it. I wanted to play the last eight that they used. Da, 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 da. Duke always changes that in the last eight.
You see, there you go again. Now I'm learning something else.
Oh,
what
the
was
last
that?
Eight
Show
of
me
the
that.
Chorus instead of...
Show me that.
So instead of doing that, I sing the original melody. Mm-hmm. But his original melody is... All you should know as well as I, our love deserved another try. That's a dumb duty.
You might as well keep going now. Lots of endings to choose from.
You remember? Yeah. Do you remember Piano Playhouse?
Sure, that was the first.
That, was that something?
It was one of the first things I ever did in New York, and I was
so excited.
To
oh,
death.
Of course!
I wasn't even excited. I was just shaking, you know. And if I would have had to say something, that would have been the end. I mean, but just to sit there and play. It's funny how you get used to things. I can remember being so nervous, playing at the Embers. Where you and I met, I guess, this was around, I don't know, in the early 1950s or something. Mm-hmm. And I was so nervous working opposite Eddie Heywood.
Oh, sure.
But I had to write on a piece of paper, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, now I'd like to introduce Eddie Heywood or something. Isn't that insane? Now you can't shut me up.
I get intimidated very easily. I'd rather not know if somebody's there. But then there are times I want to know, too.
I really like to know because I think having people in the club that are special, it gives you a little adrenaline.
Something terrifies me sometimes.
Well, it terrifies me too, but I remember Charlie Shavers saying something to me about that.
He's a doll.
You shouldn't feel like that because these people have come in the club to hear you and you should forget yourself and give them your best.
There you are. There
you know,
you are.
He really told me.
Lose that self-consciousness and forget about it.
Yeah, listen, unfortunately, we have to wind this up because this is the shortest hour I've ever known, but it's really been a ball having you here, Hazel.
Thanks, Mary.
And I hope we can play together just one more time with Fine and Dandy.
All right.
Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McParland and her guest Hazel Scott, a program originally heard in 1980. Join us each week at this time as Piano Jazz brings you an hour of conversation and improvisation featuring outstanding guest artists from our archives. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. This episode was produced by Dick Phipps, recorded by John Dozier, and edited and assembled by John Gelinas. John Ball was production assistant. The executive producer was William D. Hay. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for the original production was provided by a grant from Exxon Corporation, by the National Endowment for the Arts, by NPR, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Support for digital archiving was provided by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.